This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Here's Anthony. Anthony! Well, Bentley again, denying Manchester United.
Well, he's had a blinder. In goal for Wolves, he really has.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. It's me, Matt Beadle, here with this week's guests. And I say guests because for the first time ever, chaps, on the Goalkeepers Union podcast, we are plural. It's two for the price of one. So on my right, we have former Southend United, Brentford and Bristol City goalkeeper now with Wolverhampton Wanderers in the Premier League, Stan Bentley.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Great to have you. And to my left, joining him, we have current goalkeeper coach of Wolverhampton Wanderers for the second time on the show, Mr. Neil Cutler.
How are we doing?
We're okay. Good. You're thank right. you. We're good. So you are joining esteemed company here, Cut. So there's only been three others, I think, who have appeared on the show twice or more than once, basically.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, very good.
That is Kasper Schmeichel, right. Yeah. Asmir Begovic and David Rouse.
Very good.
Yeah. So good company, mate.
Yeah, very good. Absolute legends.
And a debut for you, mate.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I've listened to it enough, so it's about time I jumped on, wasn't it?
Well, we start with quickfire questions, which ordinarily we do with a single interview. You've actually done yours before. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether you remember what you answered, to be fair.
Don't know.
So we'll rattle through yours quickly. Yep. So gloves that you wear?
Cells.
Cells and cells only?
Cells and cells only. I've been through couple of different brands in the past, but I've been in sales now for probably 3.5-4 years now. Very happy. Adam's a good guy, so yeah, I'm comfortable with what I'm wearing.
Nice. It's what you went with, wasn't it, sales?
Yes, the back wristband. In the past, yeah, in the past. Mm.
Yeah.
Definitely, when I was playing.
Favourite kit?
That I've worn.
Or that someone else has worn?
You had a horrible one at Bristol City, didn't you? Multicoloured thing.
Yeah, I had multicoloured pink at Bristol City. Oh. It looked better on than it did off, I'll be honest.
That's debatable.
I was like, oh my God.
There was a decent period, to be fair, because you also had the... Because it was Hummel, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So they replicated the 92...
The Peter Schmeichel. Yeah. That was quite cool, that kit, to be fair. The black with the multicolour, that was cool. I remember when I had a Southend, it was all white with like grey accents and it was unbelievable when it was clean. Within 10-15 minutes of obviously being on the pitch, it was very difficult for the kit man to get the stains out, but all white, I just felt so slick in it. So I like all being in all one colour.
Okay. Oh yeah, the monochrome.
Yeah, I can't stand it if it's like, for example, I've seen David Rea recently wearing black shorts with like, is it green shirt and green socks? I'm like, I'd rather just have green shorts personally. But listen, it's down to...
I was always the same as that. I couldn't wear anything like a change of socks or I'd have to have all the same colour.
Yeah.
Is that part of the wanting to feel and look good when you're out on the pitch?
Yeah, for sure. One thing that I've kind of grown up with is a bit of an ethos of you can't be the part if you don't look the part. You know, it's a full package. So I could be amazing in goal and do everything else great, but if I look sloppy and I don't look professional, then that's part of my game that's being let down. It's all part of a package for me, so... Looking the part is just as important as various other components of my game.
When you look at a goalie, you say if he strips well or not, if he looks good in his kit, I think that's a big thing. If they look imposing, or you know, like it's, some goalies can be huge and look small. It's a really strange phenomenon, really. Mm-hmm. You know, like some goalies are small and look big. I think a kit helps that.
Do you think having a particular feature as well can help, just subconsciously for some people, whether it's a funny haircut, whether it's wearing a helmet like Petr Cech, for example?
In terms of feeling right or...
Even just perception or being noticed as a goalkeeper.
Yeah, I mean, I always tell a goalie to have a real presence, you know, like whatever it takes, whether it's the way you walk or the way you talk or the way you move, you have to have a presence and you have to have a sense of confidence. People need to look at you, even though you've not touched the ball, and go, wow, he's a confident boy, you know, and that's just, that can be, like I say, something as small as the way your shoulders are and the way you walk on the pitch and how you come across as confident, even though you may be not. I think that's a big thing, and it is part of it. It's a big part of it. You've got to be able to play with a presence. With a huge presence.
Most memorable save?
Winning penalty save, League Two playoff final at Wembley.
There's loads to choose from, to be fair, from your back catalogue.
Yeah, I made a few, yeah. But that's probably the single most important. I can pick out in my brain now, I'm like almost photographic memory of saves, how I felt in moments, the kind of body position at periods of time, what the state of the game was. I'm really good at kind of remembering moments and saves like that. But if I had to pick one with kind of the meaning behind it and the time and kind of what it led to, obviously was promotion, and then that was probably the one.
That's interesting. We talk about this a lot in terms of goalkeepers who we have on the podcast who say, I can't remember anything about my career. I certainly can't remember the saves, tend to remember the mistakes more so. Mm. But you have that photographic memory of everything, the feelings.
Yeah, yeah. Like you could say to me, what was the save you made? And I'm not saying like I know the minutes and the seconds or anything silly like that, but if they say, oh, for example, you played Barnsley away on a Tuesday night 2 or 3 years ago, what was the saves you made? I remember I tipped one onto the post, and I remember about 5-10 minutes later, I flicked one wide just to the right hand side of the post as the camera looks on the left hand side. And I also remember that we were 2-0 up and we drew 2-2 in the last minute, which was not quite as good. But yeah, I'm really, really good at remembering moments.
Is that because you watch them back afterwards and you analyse your own performance so much, or is it just because you're that focused in the moment that you remember it?
Probably a bit of both. I'm very analytical. I get clips sent to me with cuts and Scott Bevan every single day. I'm sitting there while my kids are running right around me and my head is in my clips for just a 5-minute period. My missus is like, how are you concentrating on that when this is happening around you? It's just quite funny, but always just take a moment, mostly the same day or worst case scenario the day after, where I'm just watching training back, just looking at things and kind of summarising how I'm feeling during the moment. If there's things that Cuts has said that I need to work on, or there's things that we're working on that week or whatever the case may be, I'm always kind of thinking, right, well, could I have, for example, the current one is getting onto my leading leg and pushing. So am I doing that at certain moments during my session? Is my body shape right? Is my balance right? All those kind of things. Is my head and hands in the right position? All those little things I'm looking for on a daily basis. So with regards to remembering the things for on the matches, it's probably very, very, very similar. It's because I do analyse, of course, but also because I play with a certain intensity in which I'm so focused on what I'm doing. Like, for example, my debut last year at Man United, I don't remember anything about the crowd, but I remember every individual moment during the game. So I remember my family saying it was really loud and, you know, the atmosphere was incredible and this, that and the other, and I was like, didn't hear it. For me, the stadium was silent and all I could kind of hear was the pitch. And I don't know how I do that or why it happens, it just happens. I don't ever remember the conscious of being in Old Trafford in terms of the atmosphere. Until at the end, and a couple of times when I'm in the game, I actually had to remind myself, take it in, because this is your Premier League debut. So yeah, it's I don't know. I don't know if you can call it a skill. I'm not really sure.
But I think so. Yeah.
I want to get back to the end of my career and go, I remember moments. I remember feelings. I remember my career as an experience as much as, you know, being successful. And I want it to be a good experience in which I take to the grave with me. You know?
I think what you've just said there, quite a few things are a skill. Now, in terms of coming for a game from a game or games in the past and only remembering the real positives, I think is a massive skill. And it's a skill that takes time for a lot of people to develop. Now, in terms of like a Ben Foster was the king of that, like he would not remember or care about mistakes. But if you care about them but don't remember them, it's huge. You know, I think you have to care about them in order to get better, in order to progress, in order to work on real detail. But if you can care about and work on the detail and then forget them and only remember the pluses, the positives, the saves, I think it's huge, especially for young goalies coming through. You know, the ones that we have to bring through, because goalkeeping's an art, right? And it's very lonesome. It's very solo, and it's a sport within a sport. But if you can be a young goalie and really, really enjoy it, and really, you know, focus on the positives rather than negatives, it's huge. You know, we need more young goalkeepers enjoying what they do rather than worrying about the negatives. Like the positives, like Dan's just said, they're huge. Thinking about the saves, thinking about the detail of what you've done wrong, but only really remembering the positives.
It's key, that, isn't it? Because I think naturally we're so geared towards, I don't know, you guys coming in off the grass and going, right, here's what you could have done better in this situation. Mm-hmm. But instead saying, here's what you did do. Look at what you've just done.
We tend to make sure that they get clips of things they do well and things they don't do well. So we'll put in a clip, right, there's you sweeping off your back leg. Here's you doing it right and leading off your leading leg. So they can go, right, okay, there's the minor detail of when you do it right and when you don't do it right is minute, and it takes repetition. But you've got to be able to see both in order to improve, right? That's when I'm doing it right, that's when I'm doing it wrong. And then just keep doing it and doing it and doing it until the wrong becomes less and less and less, and then you don't do it.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, two more. We'll just quickly do it. Goalkeeping icon.
The two for me that are at the pinnacle ever are Buffon and Casillas. I think at the moment, just in terms of longevity, in terms of their achievements collectively as their respective teams and countries, and their individual accolades as well, I think they're the two that are that, you know, they set the heights, if you like.
And the best goalkeeper you've either played with or against?
That's a really tough question. We should have prepped me about this. I'll probably go David De Gea.
The free agent, unattached David De Gea at the moment.
Incredibly free agent, which is mind-boggling, but it is what it is.
Yeah, okay. Well, we are. I like to set the scene. So we are sat in the training ground at the moment. It is teeming down with rain outside. It's a good job you're not outside today. We're in, can I say we're in the manager's office?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
So it's a bit weird, this dynamic here. I'm kind of sat in Gary O'Neill's chair. I am the gaffer today.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, which feels quite nice. Yeah. Not gonna lie, quite powerful.
Is that because Richard's not here, or just because?
Yeah. Well, call me a caretaker, shall we? Yeah. He'll love that. Thanks for that.
No worries. Go give him a little mention, shall
we? Yes, yeah, absolutely. So as I said, it's the first time we've done this. So goalkeeper coach with goalkeeper. Just thought we'd dig into the dynamic, really, of how the pair of you work. You're obviously relatively new to the club. You are here since January, earlier on in the year. So both of you, kind of, obviously you've found your feet now, but how have you found it?
Really good. I'm really enjoying it, and I'm not just saying that. I really enjoy the place. The goal is, and the environment that we've created so far is a really good dynamic, full of different characters. Like, the difference between Jose, Sara and Dan are huge, massively different. But it's really good for me, you know. It's really good for me to be able to deal with different characters, different ways of learning, different cultures. And I'm getting my head around it, and I'm enjoying the challenge. And it is a challenge, because you go from Jose, who's come from a totally different culture, who has lots and lots and lots of qualities, but needs pulling a little bit, needs pushing, needs my help in terms of driving him, and for him to understand what he has actually got and how he can actually improve. Whereas Dan's completely different, because he drives himself and probably needs pulling back a little bit in terms of how he develops. He's so eager and so keen. Sometimes you have to go, calm, you know, this is the best way forward for us, and have patience in that development, because he wants it all now. He wants it, and he's so keen and so eager. So you've got two people from totally different spectrums. You got Tom King, who's different from a different level, who's come from League One, League Two, and is now in the Premier League, the best league in the world. And he's quite similar to Dan in terms of just wants to learn, just wants to get better, just wants to improve. And it's just building an environment and setting a philosophy which works for everybody, you know, and everybody comes in. First and foremost, they come in, they're enjoying the environment, enjoying each other's company, enjoying the work. And secondly, they know they're coming in to work, and they're not just ticking a box and going home. I think that's the big thing. They have to come in every day and feel like they've learned something, they've stepped forward in an enjoyable philosophy and environment. It's so important. If they don't come in and enjoy the work, if they don't come in and enjoy the environment, they ain't going to get better. They ain't going to learn. They ain't going to move forward. So come rain or shine, come bad result, good result, they have to feel like the pressure's off them, that I'm with them, that I'm developing them, and everything I'm doing is there to make them better, that we have a relationship, I know everything about them, and they're going to move forward. They do feel like they're constantly moving forward, and that's so important.
Do you enjoy the environment? Enjoy your work?
Yeah. Say yeah now.
It's going handcuffed.
No.
That's rubbish.
No, to be fair, it's not great. it's a really good environment. I think it's been quite natural that Cuts has come in and we've taken to him. I feel like he's taken to us. It probably took time for a couple of individuals at the start, but I think that's always, there's always going to be a transition between the style and the philosophies that we had before in terms of coaching, and obviously Tony Roberts, who is a respectable coach as well, into another respectable coach who works in a slightly different way. And there's no right or wrong. For me, I've worked very similar to Cuts in terms of constant demand for development, constant demand for working hard and working at a real intense level. That suits me personally. I'm not someone who thrives off of kind of just coasting and getting through. I want to be challenged and made to learn every single day. And that's the environment that Cuts are talking about there, which is, it's one where we all feel like we're pushing, we all feel like we're developing, we're getting better every single day. And even when we kind of hit the targets that we have now, it's then making new targets and going again. It's not just maintaining levels, to get into someone and go, right, that will do, we've cracked it. You know, that's a really dangerous place to be. So in terms of coming in every day, I come in every day and know I'm going to get worked, I know I'm going to work hard, I know I'm going to learn, and I'm going to try and develop to be an even better goalkeeper.
So, and so Cuts mentioned there the difference between you and Jose in terms of your personalities, your characters. Do you feel that? And is that, how is that like, how do you manage that?
I'm not silly. I know, obviously I've been around the game a long time. I'm very experienced. I know what works for me. I know what I believe to be the right path of development. Not everybody has to be like me. There's no, I'm not saying what I'm doing is right. What I'm doing is what I believe to be the best route for me.
I think that's something you've learned recently as well, isn't it? That we spoke about. Like Dan's got a personality and a drive, which he's got that really works for him, that is really good and it's given him a hell of a career, a really good career and getting to where he is now in the Premier League. Other people haven't got his drive and haven't got his way of working and his mindset and his standards. And I think we've spoke about the psychological side of that, where in terms of his leadership, and he is a leader, how he deals with other characters from other cultures and other ways, and not get frustrated with that. Do you know what I mean? Because that will bring his level down through frustration. It's having to guide the ones that come from different cultures and different ways in order to not make him frustrated. Do you know what I mean? It's like he'll get frustrated with other people that are not reaching those levels of standards, that are not working as hard as he does. So we've got to get him away from that and try and help him to lead others rather than get frustrated with others. And that's a big learning curve. Yeah. And that's what we've been concentrating on Bents over the last, since I've been here. Calm his frustration. I'm going to take that frustration to leadership, and how he goes about that, I think, is key.
Leadership's a big word, right? Because you've implemented yourself in a leadership group here. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. I'm naturally someone who wants to raise standards, or who wants to create a standard and pull other people with me. And I want the whole group to feel like the standards can get better. The standards are a minimum requirement. Like, we have a minimum requirement of what's acceptable and what's needed for us to get better. Like Cut says there, not everybody has that ethos and will buy into that. So that's then down to me to have adaptability and say, right, okay, well, those individuals may manage themselves in a different way compared to me. Doesn't mean they're not aiming for the same place always, but then obviously then from my point of view, I then have to adapt to each individual and say, right, this person may react better off of a calm conversation rather than me shouting and screaming and being intense on a football pitch. They might respond to the, you know, the whole proverbial arm round the shoulder kind of thing. And that is right. And I had to, and we identified that I'm always coming from a good place in terms of what I'm demanding, and it's always to help others and to help myself and for everybody to be better and the environment to be better. But sometimes it has to be reined and managed to a point where not everybody responds in the way that my methods are designed to.
Which is, again, interesting, because you're, what, 12, 13, 14 years into your career now. So at this stage, I mean, we always talk about the fact that you're continually improving, continually learning. But working with Cuts, is that's kind of now been discovered and reined in.
Yeah, I think it's something that, in the Premier League, there's probably, compared to where my upbringing has been, even in the Championship, there's more cultures and different backgrounds in the Premier League compared to anywhere else. Whereas the typical, in inverted commas, English mentality is kind of all guns blazing, effing and blinding and all that kind of thing. And that's not suitable for every background and every culture. Not everyone takes it the way where it's designed. So that's then, like I say, having about that adaptability and saying, this lad doesn't understand the English culture of effing this and effing that and like demanding for more. It's about explaining to them why I'm saying what I'm saying and saying it to them in a manner in which they can understand better and see clearer. What I'm saying is to help them and to develop them and to drive standards rather than having a go at them, because that's the way they perceive sometimes my intensity of what I say on the pitch.
I think as well, we've got a really good young English manager that's got a small squad and trying to develop a culture and environment like we are as a small unit, as a goalkeeping unit, where we are a tight group. You know, like we're a small squad in the Premier League and we need, and we are trying to develop a squad that pulls together, that to get really close and tight together, which is really difficult when you do have different cultures, when you do have people from different countries that hardly speak English and maybe at times can only see Bence's body language and can see he's angry and annoyed instead of it being, you know, like, this is what we want, this is what we need. And Dan's a big player in that, because in football nowadays, you get very few leaders, you get very few real voices. So the ones that we do have need to understand the impact of what they say and how they say it. Especially, like I say, Gary's trying to implement an environment where we get closer, where we pull together, where we're all on the same line, we're all in line. Because if you don't, and it's a small squad, and your small squad then starts to get bitty, then you're going to struggle. So we need to all pull together when things aren't quite going right. I mean, things are going right at the minute. Touch wood, you know, we're getting results. We're doing all right for the size of squad as well and where we're at. If you have a little bit of a wobble and you don't pull together, that's when things can go awry. So we need leaders like Bence who go, hang on a sec, no, come on, we're together. We're a group. We're moving forward. And that's so important.
You've named the three characters, Jose Sarr, Bence and Tom King. Bence similar-ish to Kingy, and then Sarr being slightly different.
Yeah.
So as a goalkeeper coach too, you are pulling them like one by one. Is there a time when you're collectively getting the three and saying, right, let's talk about this as a group?
Yeah, I mean, I like to, obviously I like them to know I'm with them as individuals. So my job is to get Bence into the first team. That's my job. My job is also to keep Sarr in the first team. My job is to get Kingy closer to the first team. They all understand that, and all they know is I'm trying to make them better. Do you know what I mean? Whether it's we have individual meetings, we have the individual clips where we go through individually, but we also have groups. So we'll have threat meetings of oppositions where I like to have discussions. What do we think? You know, this is what we're coming up against. What do we do? How do we think about it? What's the best way forward? I think that's an ongoing thing at the minute. It's not got to a place where I'm 100% happy with. But again, Jose's a different character. He's more introverted in terms of, especially he's not got unbelievable English. So again, he's in a foreign country, different culture, but he has better English than he lets on. But I'm trying to get him to be a leader as well. I'm trying to get him to be a voice. I'm trying to get him to step forward more and to trust himself in terms of his leadership. So I want him to be more vocal in those meetings. And it's 100% coming. He's becoming more consistent in games. He's becoming more of a leader. He's becoming more of a voice. So that's happening. That's working. And it's a slow process. And it's another one where you have to not get frustrated. You have to stay calm and you have to think about the bigger picture and slowly drip in your philosophy and your thought process.
That dynamic as well there that you've just mentioned of, you know, your job is to get Bence in the team. Your job is to keep Jose Sarr in the team. When you're in goalkeeping, you kind of get it, right? You understand how it all works. How is that for you, knowing that, his goal is to get you into the team, but also keeping the number one as the number one?
I think there has to be, I then have to kind of almost be slightly selfish in that situation. And it then becomes a kind of a one-man mission, if you like. Because I know that, it's a weird analogy, but if I said that, whilst I'm trying to get in the team, I'm fighting against Cuts and Sarr. While Sarr is trying to stay in the team, he's fighting against me and Cuts. Do you know what I mean? That's really, really, that's a really strange way to be, and it's a really strange feeling and a place to be. Like, Cuts doesn't want me to get in the team because he wants Sarr to stay in the team. But Sarr doesn't want to stay in the team because he wants me to get in the team. It doesn't make any sense, does it? But I get it, and he knows I get it. And while Sarr is in the team, I will give anything I can to help him as well. So that's weird from my point of view as well, because I want his shirt, but I'll do anything I can to help him. So the way I have to earn being in the team isn't by being a bad teammate and being unprofessional. It's by being the complete opposite of that. It's by being as good as I can to him, help him as much as possible. Because one day the shoe will be on the other foot and I will expect from him what I've given to him in terms of being a good teammate. But it's just an acceptance from me as a player, more specifically a goalkeeper, in which that I know that Cuts' job is to keep Sarr on the team. I know that. And I know Cuts' job is also to replace me with Kingy. And that breeds competition between us all. And then on the flip side, Cuts has also got to do the opposite and, you know, push me to the front, and he's trying to help everyone as much as possible. Then to a degree, it's down to us individually to go, right, okay, well, I've got the support behind me, so I'm going to go and do it. I'm going to go and perform and work my backside off in training every single day. I'm going to show the manager. And as soon as there's an injury or a lack of form, or I'm outperforming him in training every day, I'm in. Because there's no way that if I spoke to Cuts or I spoke to the gaffer, that they can turn and go, well, you haven't quite done this. You've not been good enough at this. This isn't been good enough. And Cuts knows that I'm one that's receptive to feedback. So I'm constantly wanting feedback. What do I do here? What can I do better here? What can I do to get in the team? And Cuts knows that. And I'm not naive enough where I think that a good week in training is going to get me in the team. It's over a sustained period of time, and I know that. And I know that, obviously, Sarr's got the shirt at the moment, and he knows that I want it off him. So it's a dynamic that's really difficult to explain, and I'm hoping that I'm portraying it in the right light. But again, it's really difficult to give clarity on it because it's very, very unique.
I think as well, it's so much easier for me as a goalkeeping coach than an outfield coach, because I can see as soon as he dips, I can see as soon as he's frustrated, and I can see him and just, I'll walk over him and say, what are you thinking? And I can sort and get to the bottom of it. Whereas an outfield coach, you've got so many players to look after and care for, and you got to think about them technically, tactically, psychologically, where they're at. And a few of the outfield players, I think, can start to feel a bit disjointed, a bit like, do you know what I mean? It must be difficult for them and difficult for the coaches. So much easier for me, because I can just see a little dip in him or something, that little frustration, and I go, come on, what's up? Do you know what I mean? Because I know him and I know where he's at, and there's only four at a time, so it's easy. So much harder for an outfield coach, because they've got so many different dynamics, different cultures, different ways of working, and some of them can, you've got some players that have played for the biggest clubs in the world, and they can feel frustrated, but coaches might not see it, because their head's on training or their head's on other players, or I've got so many others to look after. It's just easier for me to go, I can see it, I can understand it. And as soon as I see him dropping a work ethic slightly, I can pull him in and go, hey, come on, get back on it. It's just easier.
And getting that opportunity to be a number one, to displace Jose Sarr, for example, is that a case of just waiting for your chance, or does it get to a point where you physically, you knock on the manager's door and say, right, or you speak to Cuts and say, right, I deserve to be in?
Probably both. It depends on the situation. Obviously, I don't think there's a right or a wrong answer to that. It will depend on the individual to assess the situation. So if Sarr was having a really bad time and, there was a lot of culpable mistakes that were costing us points, there'd be perhaps a degree of expectation creeping in for me, going, okay, well, this has been lasting however long, so at some point you would then foresee change. But at the same time, I can't put myself in that position unless I'm doing everything right to get to that position. I have to earn that position first and foremost. So I can't just go, well, I'm the number two at the moment, so as soon as he makes a mistake, oh, that's it, I'm in. Because if I haven't worked right and I haven't been good enough in training, and my attitude hasn't been right and I haven't been good enough in the gym and my lifestyle hasn't been right, every single little box, regardless of whether I'm playing, that hasn't changed from when I was playing every week at Bristol City and various other clubs before that to where it is now. So I'm still prepping to play every single week. Obviously, you work a little bit harder when you're the number two because, you know, you're not starting the game per se, but you do a little bit more in training, a little bit more in the gym. And everything I'm doing on a daily basis is gearing up to when my opportunity comes. I know it will, and I know I'll earn it because I won't be outworked. So I'm waiting, but whilst waiting, I'm also kind of putting pressure on. I'm constantly having conversations with cuts, like, what can I do? What more can I do? Where can I improve? What can I do to help the team more? Where can I be better psychologically? Where can I be better off the pitch? Is there any gym that I need to do? And if I'm doing everything in my power, then it becomes the decision of cuts and the manager and the coaching staff to make a decision if and when required.
I won't be outworked. I like that. It's a nice
No, it's impossible. Nice line. I won't be outworked.
It's the example of what you're talking about.
100%. Yeah. He's the opposite. You need to calm him down rather than you know, push him, which is a really good thing. I'd rather calm somebody down than push somebody forward. I think the key is that he pushes me, I push him, and that's how it should be. It should be that he should be knocking on my door going, what do you think about this, or what do you think about that, or that clip, or this clip. Shouldn't me going, look at this clip, or look at that clip. They've got to drive their own development, which is the key, and that's the environment. I keep talking about environments, but it is the environment you need to set. You know, they're driving their own development, not the other way around. You shouldn't drive their development.
McNeil can take the delivery into the hands of Bentley again, who has denied Everton opportunities on multiple occasions this afternoon.
If we take it back to when you came into the club, how does that play out? How do you assert yourself? How do you carry yourself when you first come in and you've got the three goalkeepers there? Mm-hmm. What's your approach in terms of getting them on board?
First of all, they need to understand my personality and what I'm all about and how I work and how I am as a person. I think that's vitally important that they start to get it quite early on that I'm 24/7 their development. I'm all in. I'm not messing about. I'm here for them 100%. They need to understand very quickly the environment and the philosophy that I'm setting means they have to work hard every day. They have to be able to not only listen and understand what I'm saying, but drive their own development very, very quickly. Because if they don't, they get left aside. They can't. The sessions that I create and the sessions that I put on, if you don't hit them and if you don't give them 100%, then you will fall by the wayside, because the pace and the detail that we're working in, if you don't work to it, you'll quickly fall away. And it's just setting that, like I say, set the environment that, you know, this is how I work, this is what I need you to do, and if you don't do it, you'll be gone. You'll be moved aside because other people will. Other people will step forward, other people will move forward. And it's that, but they're understanding that I'm not an idiot with it. You know, I'm a decent person. I'm there for them, 100% there for them, whether it's on the field or off the field, whether it's something at home, I'll always be there for them. And I think it's important they understand that.
And that transition for you then as well, Ben, so you went from Tony Roberts, you mentioned it slightly already, but you went from Tony Roberts to Cuts. As a goalkeeper, is it easy to make that transition, or is there a period where you have to adjust?
For me, adaptability is, I find it quite easy. I'll always try and fit the role that I need to fit. In terms of with Tony, we didn't quite work at the intensity that we're working cuts on a daily basis. It was a little bit more laid back, a little bit more chilled. The quality of the work was still there, the hard work was still there, but everything that we do with cuts on a daily basis is very detail driven. It's very hard work driven, but with an emphasis on the game on a Saturday as well. So sometimes Cuts will say to me at the end of the session, what do you think of that? How was that for you? And I'll say, the session was carnage. It was absolute carnage happening in front of us, with mannequins, with rebounds, with bodies, with different shots from different angles. And he'll go, good. Because that's what's going to be recreated on a Saturday. It's not all controlled volley, half volley, dipper, shot from an angle. It's just carnage. There's shots. And I mean controlled carnage, not just kind of like make it up random. Obviously, there's drills within the carnage, but it's not predictable. And that's what football is. That's what the game is. It's not always, oh, you're going to receive a dipper from the edge of the box and it's going to be straight down your throat. You know, it's not always that, because that's not what the game offers. Yes, fundamentally, there are techniques that we should be almost perfect at, or at least very, very good at. And there is repetition within that. But then when we're prepping for a Saturday, repetition is only going to get us so far. We then need to be ready to face what comes our way. And that is unpredictable madness, especially in the Premier League with how fast it is. With some of the goals you see on Match of the Day on a Saturday night, you look and think, wow, like, is that even possible to work on that? Well, it only is if it's recreating a situation like you're going to see in a game, which is what we do. It's so game-based what we do on a daily basis. So there's been sessions where it's been absolute madness, and I think Cuts has probably come up to me at the end and said, was that all right? As if to say, it was so mad that he's asking me if it was all right to, you know, to be in the moment in the situation. And often, I think pretty much every time I've said, yeah, perhaps maybe we at one point we could do this, but generally it's always like, yeah, I really enjoyed myself. And that's an often key thing for me. If I'm enjoying it, it must mean it was good. And sometimes there is uncomfortability within those situations as well. Sometimes there is frustrations in the sessions that we do, because it's not controlled. It's madness. Just go and perform in those areas, but with detail. And that's the closest I can say that we get to a game in our very controlled environment.
I think it's important you create a neurological pattern, so you've got repetition in the chaos. Yeah. You're recreating match-specific situations where the brain automatically knows how to deal with it. You know, you're not triggering, you're not falling back, you're nice and calm in the moment, because you've gone from conscious in training to subconscious in games, where you've had to think about in training for a long period of time, because that's how you create your patterns. You go into a game, it's subconscious, you're no longer thinking about it. The brain automatically knows what to do in that situation at all times, because we've constantly recreated it. You're not triggering, you're not falling back, you know, you're not doing a foot save when it should be a hand save. You automatically know how to transfer and push. And that all happens from repetition in training, constantly repetition, training through chaos, you know, constantly. My sessions work and our sessions work where we go from very, very basic hand-eye coordination drills where we're smashing balls at the face, so they're not triggering, they're not falling back, biomechanically they're sound. That then increases to get more detailed and more chaotic as you go along, to, in the end, you're creating match-specific chaos, and you've done all the detail at the start, so by the time the session finishes, everything's perfect. Not going to say perfect, but everything's fine in terms of how they move, how they transfer, how they push. You know, there's not any kind of falling back. There's no kind of triggers. They're all holding the shape really well. They're not robotic, but they're athletic and they're agile and they're transferring how we need them to transfer. You know, when you're playing the Premier League, the best league in the world, if you're not biomechanically sound, if you're not transferring quick enough, if you're not getting onto your leading leg quick enough, you're going to concede. Simple as that. They're hitting bottom corners with no backlift. And if you can't transfer and push, if you can't see it off the foot, you're going to struggle. So we have to create all that, again, from start to finish, where you build and you build and you build and build, and it gets harder and harder and harder, to the point where in a game situation, very rarely do you not have chaos in front of you. Very rarely do you not have a centre half lunging, you know, like, or diving in front of something, or bodies in front of you, and you're having to see it quicker than it moves, and you're having to transfer with the flight and the trajectory of the ball, and that happens like that in a split second. Have to recreate it, and you have to do it possibly harder and more difficult on the training pitch than you do actually, you are actually going to have it in a game. So then it becomes easy. Everything becomes easy. And that's the way it has to be daily. And if you don't hit it, if you don't go onto a training pitch and you're half-hearted and you don't go at it, then be prepared to make a mistake, because it has to be that level every single day in order to create neurological patterns, positive ones, ones where you go from subconscious to conscious.
You mentioned uncomfortable there as well. At times, do you want the goalkeeper to be uncomfortable in a session?
100%, because that's the game. You know, you're going to be caught in a situation or caught a position where you're uncomfortable. You're going to be caught and where I'm smashing a ball at them from 2 yards, you know. And when you do, like, I know a lot of people say, oh, you shouldn't volley it or shouldn't half volley it. If you can deal with it off the foot, right, because you've got no kicking clues. In a game, you've got kicking clues, you know. You kind of know where the ball's going to go. If you can deal with a side volley that's smashed at you from 2 yards because you can't read it off the foot, but you're not triggering, not falling back, and you're just transferring and pushing, and you're seeing it, I keep going back to table tennis. We talk a lot about table tennis, where in table tennis, you start off, you can't really see it. When you play in, you go, ooh. By the time you've finished and you've practiced, you can not only see the ball, but you can see the spin of the ball, and you can counteract the spin of the ball without even thinking about it. And that's football. It's exactly the same with goalkeeping. You know, you see it that quick. You not only see it, you see the trajectory and movement of it, and your body transfers with that trajectory without even thinking about it. So once you go through all that uncomfortableness, that, wow, that's coming at my face at 100 mile an hour, but you're calm within that, and you're holding your shape within that, and you're transferring your body weight within that, then come to a game, it's easy.
This is why we love goalkeeping, right? It's the intricate, minute detail within goalkeeping that, yeah, it exists elsewhere on the pitch, but there's just something about goalkeeping with that. And the way you're describing it, it's almost a bit like limitless, isn't it? Almost seeing everything before it actually happens.
100%. And that's like what we're trying to get across now to young goalies that the, and to young goalkeeping coaches, really. You know, the importance of the detail, the real important, I think it's coming away from the game a little bit, the importance of real detail, even like young, you know, where you're going, right, okay, your movement, your acceleration, deceleration patterns, how are you going to get from there to there? What are you going to do when you get there? How are you going to set, even like how they come to set? You know, like we'd talk about, oh, what's your set position? There is no such thing as a set position, because it all relates to where the ball is, where the distance of ball to goalkeeper, your position's going to change. So you go, what's your set position? Well, it's going to differ to where the ball is. It's going to change in order for me to maximise my transfer, to maximise how I transfer my body weight. My body position has to change in relation to ball distance. So, you know, even at a very young age, just that the detail of just those basics, I think is huge, you know, and how they grow up and how they develop. We need to develop these young goalies to understand, you know, how they move and how they work around the goal and the speed of that and make it be match specific.
Do you have a favourite type of session that you go into in training?
Match related. Saving balls, match related, moving around the goal, seeing it, not seeing it. Because that's what I'm going to face as soon as I go over to the 11v11 or as soon as I step out on a Saturday. There's going to be bodies in front, like Cut says, there's going to be Dawson, Max in front of me, lunging for balls. They're going to be going through people's legs. There's going to be little deflections. There's going to be times when I'm unsighted, so I might have to have a little lean one side or maybe even be slightly out of position based on where my defender is. If my defender's covering one side of the goal and I know and I trust him to cover that side of the goal, can I then have a little lean because I know that he's covered that side, so then I'm going to go the other side. So when we do the sessions that Cuts is speaking about, often at the start, you almost sometimes become a little bit of rabbit in the headlights when the kind of starts. It's like, whoa, like what's going on? But as soon as kind of you get your eye in and you accept that there's carnage happening in front of you, but then you adapt accordingly, that's when you start seeing results. And that's what I think Guts would agree. That's when personally I will start seeing results. When I adapt, when I take all my intricate details from the way we've started with all the hand-eye coordination stuff, all the balance stuff, all the triggering stuff at the start of the session, when I take that into the bigger parts of the session where the carnage is ensuing in front of me, that's when I will see results. That's when I'll make my biggest, best saves. That's when I'll be and feel unbeatable.
I think the detail is huge, you know, because we've moved his hands forward inches and he's making more saves. And I'm talking inches.
Really?
And he's making more saves from it because of how he transfers his body weight and how he can get through the back of the ball. We've stopped him sweeping and going off his back leg to now he's transferring and pushing just because of where his chin and his hands. His hands are pushing his chin a little bit further forward, which means he's going off his leading leg, not off the centre of his foot, and then having to sweep. So it's just a matter of inches and he'll make more saves.
So having to adjust there, is that something you go, oh, okay, right, fine, and then naturally it comes instantly, or do you have to, you have to work over a period of time?
I think Cuts will probably be able to enlighten you more in terms of the detail, but as we talk about a conscious phase, so we'll do it, and I'll be thinking about it, and often when I'm thinking about it, everything else I do goes out the window. So I know an easy catch becomes a really, really difficult catch because I'm not thinking about my hands, or my hands don't become subconscious because I'm thinking so much about leading off my nearest leg rather than sweeping. For example, I'm focusing so much on my hands being forward that I won't save it because this is when we're going through like the real crux of working through it. I won't save it because I'm thinking so much about my hand position that I'm almost not thinking about the ball. So there has to be that conscious phase of, right, I'm thinking about what I'm doing. But once I get repetition, once I increase my awareness of what I'm doing with regards to doing it every single day, then it becomes subconscious, and then I start making saves. I'm like, well, it might only take a couple of days. Some things for me, the transition for me, I think, was probably a week or two, would you say? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's slightly more to actually get it properly, maybe 3 or 4 weeks to actually get it and think, I'm doing it. And I don't even think I noticed. Cut said to me, oh, no, you're barely sweeping anymore. I'm like, oh, am I? Like, oh, yes, I've worked on it, but I didn't realise I'd got to the point where it'd become subconscious, where I'm not thinking about it anymore. But then I'm making more saves. So I remember really vividly, we're talking about memories. We did a small salad session down the bottom down there. And I remember being, my hands were in real good position. I knew they were. I could feel it. And my head was forward. And I wasn't sweeping. And I made, in the session, probably 5 or 6 low saves where it's just like, bang, like big pushes, flicks around the post. Mm-hmm. And I went up to cut it in the session. And went, I'm not sweeping. And my hands are bang on. And that's why I made them saves. He was like, yeah, I know.
And that's why, you know, if you're going to come into that session, the goalkeeping session has to be conscious. And then as soon as you go over in match specific drills with the outfielders, again, you forget about that, and it just goes to subconscious, where you just go, I'm just going to let it then. You have to go, right, Ken, now you've done your conscious work with me, forget it, go over there and let it become subconscious. Don't be thinking too much with the outfield stuff. Let your conscious stuff be with me and your subconscious. Because then when you go to a game, it has to be subconscious. You can't be thinking about it in a game. So you have to tell your goalkeepers, right, this is conscious. Your outfield work is subconscious. Because you don't want to be thinking too much of it in game-specific scenarios. Because game-specific scenarios, you have to take to a game. Do you know what I mean? So you don't want to have to go to a first-team game and having to be thinking too much. You have to let it go then. Just let it go. Just let it all flow. As is the conscious phase. That other stuff is the subconscious. Game is definitely subconscious. You don't be thinking about your hand shapes when you play in the Premier League. It's just like your normal game. You focus on your normal game. That is it. Nothing else. Let your conscious stuff develop in the work that we do.
And conscious competence, right? You don't know, you know.
Yeah.
All of that. And you saying there about how you felt prime on that day, you felt perfect. Does that come back to just constantly going over and over and over and over? Because, like, where does that come from on just a certain day where you just feel it, you feel good, you feel that you know you're going to put in a good session, you know that you're going to go out on the pitch and perform well?
I think there's, you can just feel with goalkeeping, but I know when I've kind of adapted something because it just feels smooth, really, really smooth. I don't have to think about it. I go in, I'm flying around, my intensity is top. Like, I work at an intensity every single day without foul anyway. But when I've, for example, that session down there, I just knew, I was in the moment, I knew. I didn't have to think about it. I didn't say to myself anything in the time, I just knew. I just knew that it clicked. And that was, I think, probably the session where it clicked, where from then on I didn't have to think about it very much. And every now and then, I need a reminder, even now. I need to say to myself, in my head I'm thinking, keep your hands forward, keep your head forward, and don't sweep off the furthest leg. And sometimes it's cuts. Swept, I'm like, I know I swept, yeah, next one, and then the next one I don't sweep. But it's just every now and then it's like, bang, you click back into place, because habits are obviously very difficult to break. Like you said, I'm 13, 14 years into my career, and I've been doing certain things my entire career, and certain things I'm sure Guts will elaborate that he will allow me to do because it works. But if there's certain things where I can get better and enhance what I'm doing to make more saves, then obviously I then need to adapt and change, whether it's because of me or because of the speed of the game and the effects I'm having on the game. Obviously I need to be prime. So if it's, listen, Guts obviously works with the best goalies in the world in terms of Emmy and obviously various others, so you'd like to think he knows what he's talking about, right? So if he's telling me I'm sweeping and he's backing up with the evidence on the clips, which he did, then it's up to me to visualise that, take it onto the pitch, work on it, obviously have that conscious phase, then you just feel, like I say, it becomes subconscious and you just move on with it, and then it becomes a habit.
And that's Ben's driving his own development, like exactly like I said. So he's going out there, I could tell him, but I can keep telling him, if he doesn't put it into practice, then he ain't ever going to get better. So he's driving his own development. He's looking at his clips, and it's massively important. And that's where you need your goalies to be at, you know, driving around. Because there's no point me going out there putting on sessions and putting on, you know, these, testing them to the max. And if they're not going to buy into that, if they're not going to buy into developing themselves And I'm all into, if Ben's turned around and said, no, I don't want to do it, I'm 100% fine with that. I mean, if he goes to me, he's old enough now and he's experienced enough now to go, that's not going to help me. I go, okay, we'll find another way. It's just, do you know what I mean? It's working with them. It's not me going, you have to do that. It's we challenging. We're going, right, okay, how can we make you better? Shall we try that? He might go, no, I'm not sure about that. Okay, well, let's try that. Do you know what I mean? Let's try and... Because he has to be 100% comfortable. He knows himself. He knows himself better than I know him. See what I mean? So it's me and him working to make him better, not me saying, got to do this, got to do that. It doesn't work that way. It has to be a collaboration. It has to be both of us on the same line. Just him knowing that I'm doing everything I can to make him better. And trusting that is the key. But he's the one that pushes himself. He's the one that's driving his own development. And that's the kind of person you want in the environment.
And I'm sure there are instances, right, where a goalkeeper perhaps doesn't connect as well with his goalkeeper coach. But in this case here, I suppose, little wry grin from you there, there has to be an unflinching belief. You said there he's worked with some of the best goalkeepers in the world, so you trust his judgment. There has to be that unflinching belief that what he's telling you is the right thing.
For sure. And I'm one as well that if like you say, he's a very, very well... recognised goalie coach in probably the world, worked with a World Cup winner, for example. So, you know, there's your proof right there if you wanted it, you know. So, but I'm also one where if Cuts says to me one thing, even if initially I'm a little bit apprehensive or sceptical, I'm like, okay, well, we'll give it a go. And we haven't got there yet, but maybe we will, maybe we won't. But, and I get to the point where I'm working on it, it's not working for me. I'm someone that will say, right, Cuts, I've tried it. I'll always try it. If you think it's going to make me better, I'll try it. If it's not going to make me better, then I've then earned the right in my own mind to say, listen, I've tried it. I've given it everything. It's just not happening for me. And I'll give it everything and I'll do it till I'm blue in the face. But in terms of what we've worked on so far, everything we've worked on so far has helped me. And that's, I'm sure, down to Cuts identifying things within me and him watching my clips and him working with me every day, where he goes, that'll work for you, try it.
And it might be just, like we talk about, moving his hands slightly further forward. I'll watch him and go, well, are your hands there? And he go, yeah, I'm just going to put them there. And go, because he feels it, he knows it, he understands it. So we're going, no, it worked better when my hands were just there. Go, okay, then, that's the position then that helps you transfer. That's the position that keeps your chin still. That's the position that's going to transfer into your leading leg. Let's try and keep doing that. So I'm saying, I think you need to bring your hands further forward. He'll go, yeah, okay. And he'll just manoeuvre it and slightly change it. And it's just adapting and changing and working with. Do you know what I mean? Because like I say, your hands need to be further forward. And you'll go, yeah, that's not comfortable. No, they have to be further forward. Do you know what I mean? Doesn't work that way. He has to change things ever so slightly in order to get that sweet spot where he goes, that's the one, that's the one. And then you just work repetition until done. And he's transferring, he's pushing, no more sweeping, no more triggering. And it just helps. That's why you have to have that relationship to go, hands further forward, and you go, yeah, I'll try it. And then just moves it and adapts it. That's the relationship you have to have. It's kind of different with Jose. Jose's come from a different... We talk about cultures and we talk about how he's trained in the past and how he is as a person. He's different, completely different. So I have to work slightly different way with Jose. Like when I'm dripping it into him, I have to kind of drip it a different way to a wood to Bent's. Completely different. So I can just keep... I have to keep like saying him and pulling it and just pulling him aside and going, just keep concentrating on that. Just keep concentrating on this. He's doing it, but he does it in his own time, in his own way. And it's just convincing him. Like, he's not, I don't think he's ever worked with anybody like me in terms of the way I work and the intensity I work. So it's enabling him to work and improve in his own speed and pace without me getting frustrated and going, no, just do it. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't respond to that. He doesn't respond to the way some people would. You have to, come on then, right, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to make you better, this is how we're going to get you right up there, this is how we're going to maximise what you've got. Drip, 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 and it's just slow, and it's just, like I say, completely different person.
And, I mean, we spoke about the skill that Bent has to block everything out at the time at Old Trafford, not hearing the crowd.
Yeah.
That takes a specific set of skills too, right, because so, you've got three goalkeepers there.
Yeah.
been doing it for a long time, so I'm sure it's second nature. But, you know, in one instance, Spence is doing something, you're thinking, right, I have to approach him in that way. And then in the next instance, Jose Sarr is doing something, you have to approach him, and then King. So you're having to deal with these people in really quick moments in different, you have to approach them in different ways.
Completely different ways, which is easy, right? Because I've got three or four to look after at a time. Whereas the outfield coaches, you know, like have just got, that's why I think probably unit coaches will be the way forward in the future, where you've got like five players in a unit and you can not, because you've got to be a bit more of a psychologist, haven't you? You know, I've got to know exactly how he feels. I know when I go down the morning, I go, you're okay? I can look in his eyes and I'm go, ooh, he's not in much sleep there. Or I'll look at his wellness chart and I go, ooh, his nipper's probably been up in the night. His baby's been up and he's feeling a bit. So and then I know where I'm going to put a session on. He's a bit off it. I go, Dad, don't worry, mate. Just get yourself home now. Don't do any weights. Wait to go home and rest. Do you know what I mean? I know when he's tired and I know when he's a bit frustrated, and because I've got four to look after. Whereas outfield players, completely different. Like they've got 20, 25 players to look after, and it's just, it's easier to be a good psychologist for three or four than 25.
Psychology, you mentioned it there. There's definitely an element of confidence to the point of arrogance with this one. I can sure you'd agree with that.
And yeah, definitely right. But we've still had to refine that. We've still had to work on how he moves, how he holds himself, how he walks in goal. When he doesn't play very often, so it's important that when he does, he holds his position like, nah, this is me. You know, I'm this is where I deserve to be. You know, he's played a couple of games in the Premier League where it's that self-belief, I am a Premier League goalie. You know, this is me. I'm in the best, biggest league in the world. Come and see what I do. You know, that arrogance. I still have to keep reminding him of that. He has to keep pushing him to believe that, because it's huge, like it's massive. He might feel it, but not walk like it or talk like it or show people. I want him to be able to walk on a pitch and people go, he's a confident lad, isn't he? Whoa, look at this one. You know what I mean? He's having nothing to do, but he looks like confident to the point of arrogance. And he'll show it. Sometimes he doesn't feel it, but he has to completely show it always, no matter what. Confident, that confidence to the point of arrogance is huge. It's huge.
I read I saw a post that you'd put out on Instagram quite a while ago now, but it was Lions don't lose sleep over the opinions of sheep. Is that correct?
That was right, yeah.
Yeah.
There was a whole backstory to that. I won't go into that.
Okay.
It's taken quite a while. But there's a lot of quotes like that I live by as such, because I don't live by them, but that I truly believe in. And when I was younger, I was quite naive to the point where I thought, well, if I'm a nice guy, everyone's going to like me throughout my whole career. Everyone's going to think I'm great. It's not like that. It's not been like that at any club I've been at. You know, no matter how good I've been or whatever the case may be, no matter what I do, you know, you look at De Gea, for example, had an unbelievable seven seasons or whatever it was, out of the 10 or whatever it was at Man United, won Player of the Year 5, 6, 7 times, whatever. We've made reference to the fact that he's out of contract and a free agent. Man United fans, I'm sure there will be some that just don't like him, don't think he's good enough, which is fine, that's their prerogative. So I had to accept very, very young, when I started playing, that I'm going to go throughout my career, I won't be someone's cup of tea, which is fine. But prior to that, when I was younger, I kind of thought I could go through my career and everyone think I'd great and I'd impress everybody and everyone would think I'm, you know, best thing since sliced bread. But that's when, probably not too far from when that quote was tweeted. And not everyone will think I'm very good. I'm sure people think I'm a lot worse than that. I've had comments on socials that say I'm a lot worse than that, but here's what it is. It's fine. I don't care. I don't believe in myself based on their opinions. I believe in myself based on the opinions of my coaches, of course, the manager, the cuts, my family, of course, and based on my work. So I'm a believer that if I tick as many boxes as possible going into a Saturday and I'm as good as I can throughout the week, and that's everything from the way I train, the way I am in terms of mentally, my sleep, what I eat, how much I'm hydrating, for example, every single thing is geared to a Saturday. And that's to the point where when my firstborn was born, I think I spent 18 months out of the same bed as my other half, because I knew that if the little one's up in the night, I'm not going to sleep very well. If I'm not going to sleep very well, that's a potential that I won't play well on a Saturday. Even if it's like 3, 4 days before the game. No. sleep's important. I have to recover. I have to recover well to train well. I have to train well to play well. So it's thankfully, my missus bought into it and she knew how important it was to me. And she was absolutely incredible with kind of how much she sacrificed, if you like, with her own sleep and all everything. But that's just an example of, like, I have to tick as many boxes as possible. And referring back to the quote that you mentioned there, the quote is because not everyone's going to like me, but not everyone sees what I do and what I sacrifice and my mentality.
I think it's a big thing, right? Because fans mainly will see that goalkeepers or players in general earn a lot of money and they'll go off, oh, his last performance and he earns a lot of money and that is it. So it's like a lot of fans will think that. They don't see the graft, the determination, the desire. The feeling of losing a game after a game is immense, huge, to the point where it feels like somebody's died. It gets to that point, doesn't it? The feeling in the dressing room is that much disappointment and that much, because we've spent, can you imagine the detail that the manager, the staff, the players have gone into all week in order to get a result the weekend is massive. You live, breathe, eat, drink, winning. Right, and then you lose at the weekend. I don't think some fans understand exactly what players go through the weekend and psychologically after a game. It's massive. It's huge. And we're trying to push away from that. You know, win, lose or draw, we get back on it and we go again. But it is massive in terms of the impact it has on people and the impact it has on players, individual players, if they've not played well. Like I keep saying, biggest league in the world. You're there for everybody to see and everybody knows that. So the detail that these players go into is massive. You just breathe it, you live it, you have to.
And that's a skill in itself. Again, we keep going back to having these skills, but what's labelled at a lot of players from fans is that they don't care. Like you've just said there, they lose, they don't care. But as a goalkeeper as well, it's not a case of showing that you don't care, but say you concede, say you make a mistake. There's a skill to just having your game face and not letting people know that you feel like you've made a mistake, showing that you actually, you don't care, but really inside you do.
Mm-hmm.
100%, absolutely. I think if I show disappointment with a mistake or with a performance and everyone can see how disappointed I am at times, then that's mental weakness, because that's then going to affect everything else I do for the rest of that game. Or people will look at me and I'll be perceived to be, oh, he's mentally weak because he can't deal with failure. Well, dealing with failure is a massive part of football. Absolutely huge, because no one ever has gone through their career without dealing with failure. And we talk about skills. Dealing with failure is a skill. It's something that I've learned to do, something that I'm sure cuts through his playing career into his coaching career has learned to do. And you have to. So when I'm on the pitch, you won't know how I'm feeling. If we win, of course, yeah, I'll be delighted in the other game. But if we lose and it's been a bad performance on the pitch, you won't have a clue how I'm feeling. Not a clue. But then I'll go home, I'll think about it. I've lost sleep before because of performances, because I'm overanalyzing in my head. I'm replaying certain moments in my head. So a lot more goes into feeling after performances and adversity than what's perceived. Because my feeling is I want to be perceived to be that level every single day, no matter what. You never see disappointment. Like, you might see frustration or anger, or you might go, oh, I'm probably be disappointed with that. But you, right, go on, finish, next action, go. Because I can't then allow it to lead on to more adversity.
Mm. So if we break down the Ipswich game, for example, yeah. The Ipswich game was a cup game where we'd built into the game and absolutely flying in training, developing, everything's going right, no problems at all, and conceded a couple of goals where you thought you could have done better with, correct?
Warm-up was unbelievable as well.
Like, perfect.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Everything was fine, right? So Dan goes away from the game, obviously disappointed, we get knocked out of the cup, but then it's like you break it down from a go, your position in relation to the ball was excellent. We've been working on him staying bold and protecting the space, and he did it really, really well. Built really well, calm in possession, saw passes, played through the press, played over the press, played into really, really well. No issues at all. Position in relation to the ball from through balls, perfect. Come and took his crosses, looked bold, looked confident. Just a couple of goals could do better with. Now, you're talking about somebody that's not played games for weeks and weeks and weeks, and that can happen. You know, you're going to concede goals where you think, I couldn't do better with that. But not play games. You know, it's so difficult to go into a game of that magnitude. You know, you're going into a cup game, having not played, it feels really quick. The game feels really quick because you're not in any kind of routine. You're not, you haven't got anything to go off. So that can happen, and it's just getting down to understand. And it took us probably a week to get you back into where you were, because you were that disappointed with the goals you've conceded. You go, right, okay, we're getting back on it. You know, how do we get him back on it? Came in on his day off, got him back in on his day off, just seeing the ball, getting back into routine, getting back into basics, and back into flow. And by the time the week went, he was back into his normal self. But the disappointment from that game, because, you know, like the goals he conceded, it was huge for him, you know, because of where he is and where his standards are. So we had to kind of work on that, didn't we? We had to work on it, because that just wasn't him, because everything leading up, all his development, all his progress, just conceded goals where he thought it could have been better. And that was the only thing. The rest of his game was perfect. The rest of his game was brilliant. Like, no issues at all. Just the two goals. And that's that. You go, hang on a sec, break it down for me. Break it down. Your position was great. You protected the space really well. You were calm in possession. You saw passes. All these tick, 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 tick. And for me, it's only an issue if those goals he concedes is a technical issue, because he's conceding the same type of goals over and over again. That becomes a real issue. And one-off things where he comes into a game where he's not played regularly can happen.
I can still feel it from you now, where you've just said, nah, the warm-up was really good. I was good in the warm-up.
Yeah. I take such pride in my work. Yeah. Like, such pride. And I think it's a skill in itself, showing that you don't care. You know, you look at the best goalers in the world, they make a mistake, and you look at them and it's like, and what? What does it change? Yes, the scores change, but what does it change about, for example, if Alisson makes a mistake? Does he care? Of course he cares. Does he show he cares? Absolutely not. When De Gea ever made a mistake, he looked like he just drops out on the floor. Who cares? Like, still one of the best goalers in the world. So, unless I'm not saying I'm one of the best goalers in the world, but nothing changes based on me making a mistake compared to what my work ethic is, what everything that's gone into that game is. Nothing changes. I'm still who I am. I'm still where I am. I still deserve to be here just because I made a mistake, and what? But obviously, then behind closed doors, I take such pride in my work that, yeah, it has an effect, because I'm like, I'm asking questions of myself. Why did that happen? What did I do in training to make that happen? Why didn't I do this, or why didn't I do that? And they're questions that I ask myself. So that's, and the next skill would then be back to dealing with failure. Well, you then got to deal with it by breaking that little cycle and go, no, never mind. And it was a chat with Cuts that probably triggered that, and going, who cares? You're still in the same position. You're still a Premier League goalie. You're still a top keeper. Crack on. Who cares? And I was like, oh, maybe, like, I perceive it worse than Cuts does.
You always will. You'll always perceive it like it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
Because of your standards and how you are, how driven you are. That's how it is. You'll always see that. But it does take somebody to go, hang on a sec. See where you are. See where you're at. Does it make you a worse goalie? No. Does it make you have traits that you didn't have before? No. It's just a one-off. You have to go again with all the same things and all the same qualities you put into that game, because, like I keep saying, every part of it, other than the two goals, were really, really good. So you've got to go, right, okay, I've actually stepped forward, because I've gone into a game, I've done this, 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 and this. So next time I go into a game, I'll continue to do this, this, and this. I won't step backwards. I won't play safe. I'll come out of my comfort zone again, and I'll play how I should play, rather than going, oh, no, I don't really want to do that. Ooh, I'm just going to play really safe for this game. And that's when you won't play well. That's when you won't play how we want you to play. Vitally important that you keep stepping forward. You keep coming out of your comfort zone. You still play with a presence and a confidence.
Okay, a couple more points I'd like to bring up. The first one being distribution. We've spoken a lot about the other side of goalkeeping, but distribution, how much you work on it. And obviously the emphasis that you place, obviously you were at Aston Villa with Emi, we spoke a lot about it then, and the work that you did on distribution. Mm-hmm. I'm presuming it's just as big here.
Yeah, I think it's better here, because now we're in a place where the gaffer wants us to play. But not only does he want us to play, but he's so detailed in the way he does things that he'll always give us options. And that's the most important thing. It's all right, a manager going, right, I want you to play. Go, right, okay, well, where are we going to play? At what time are we going to play? Where are we going to play to? How are we going to build? And his detail in the way he does things, and the way he's different class, like better than I've ever known before, or any manager I've ever worked before, because he's he's just so like meticulous in the way he does things that we'll always have an option, which is important. So I can work on, right, here's your out balls, this is what it's going to be, I want you to play, you know, we're going to practice just playing through, right, just the basics of playing through. A lot of the time we'll go, right, okay, I want you to, we'll practice just being under pressure, so it'll just be in a small area where we're pressing them under pressure, but you're having to find an out ball under real pressure, and then we'll do the build work with the manager and the staff and the outfielders. The main thing, the real good thing is that he's not the type of person to go, what the hell? Do you know what I mean? He never loses his head. He's always calm. He always allows us to make a mistake. He's never like, you know, what's your goalie doing? I never come up here ever once and you go, what the hell's your goalie doing? Do you know what I mean? He's the type of person that goes, when they did that in training, could they have done that? Do you know what I mean? There's always that kind of progression. That always, he'll always see things and go, can you get him to do this? So that's brilliant for me. That's perfect. Like we'll practice all the different clubs. We'll practice them all the time. Even if it's just like head tennis and passing drills, little short shot passing competitions where they think it's just a jollop. It's not. Do you know what I mean? They're just in their feet. They're just in their feet. They're calm. Do you know what I mean? That those little head tennis and passing games are big. You know, like they're always adjusting their feet. They're always having a touch of the ball. Like we'll play it for half an hour in the mornings. They'll just think it's, you know, just a laugh and a joke and a competition. But it's more touches of the ball, it's more feel, and it's competitive because there's money on it, or there's they have to clean boots, or they have to buy coffees, or so it becomes competitive. So we're creating that do not lose at any time mentality, especially when it comes to Benz, he's so tight with money, doesn't want to lose. So like he'll be like stitching people up left, right and centre, so he doesn't lose. But that's the, like I talk, I'm not going to keep saying environment, but when the young players come into that environment, they have to understand that if they don't step up with these games, they're going to lose money, or they're going to have to clean boots, or they're going to have to buy coffee, or, and they're getting it, aren't they? They're starting to step up and go, I'm not going to lose. I'm not going to lose, right? And do anything it takes not to lose. We may think, right, I'm going to go play two-touch this morning, I'm going to play head tennis this morning, or little passing games this morning, but there's a theme within it. There's a winning competitive theme within it. And not only that, they're constantly moving their feet, constantly touching the ball. And then we'll work on the other stuff, the pressing stuff, the building stuff, the side volleys, the clipping into positions where we want them to clip to quite a lot. And it's just breaking it down into little details again. Like those little goals there are from where we were side volleying into little goals yesterday, yeah. Just to get, you know, the detail of where we want it to be, where we want them to go to, and just the detail of, you know, calm with the ball, calm in possession. But you've got to, in this day and age, you play in the Premier League, you've got to be able to play. You've got to be an outfield player in possession. You've got to understand that you're going to be calm in possession. You've got to see pictures. So we just keep working on it. We're constantly working on it.
Are you tight, mate? Are you?
You're very tight. Yeah.
You know, I'll give you a bit of an insight into these games, right? So we play one kind of set of the games where no one's got to move. And then when there's any movement involved, Cuts goes, oh, you lot playing old ref. And we're like, hold on a minute, where's the jeopardy for you here? Like, what's going on? And Cuts like, no, I'm reffing, I'll create the rules. All right, yeah, all right, of course. So, you know, someone never loses, which happens to be the man sat next to me.
Bonus of being a coach, isn't it? You make the rules, you decide.
You've got to use your position.
That is manipulation of position, I'm saying.
The fine situation. Are you, as part of the leadership group, does that mean that fines you are involved in?
I am the fine master.
Right, okay.
So I collect them. I let Max, the captain, deal with the chasing. And I just have got a log of who's fined and when and why. Because people go, oh, well, what happened there? I don't remember that. And I'll go, yeah, this happened on this day and that's why. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm like, well, there you go then. So, and that's all about creating standards. And like I said, I don't want to go on and on about environment, but it's so important that the environment and the standards that we set are at a bare minimum, like I've mentioned before. And if someone's late, you have to take accountability for being late or whatever, you know, the reason of the fine is. We haven't got a fine culture, you know, you don't get fined for breathing and that kind of thing. And things are let slide and there is a little bit of empathy and compassion involved as well from my point.
There is one fine.
Go on.
That is ridiculous.
Go on.
In the physio room.
That is respect. That is respect. That is a fine based on respect. I'll let go on.
Right, so there's one fine where you get fined for farting in the physio room. I've never known anything like it.
So if you're getting treatment, you fart, it's £100.
No, wait, if someone comes in and farts,
If you're on the bed getting treatment by a physio,
yeah,
face down in the hole, and you fart whilst getting your back done or whatever, that's £100. That's scandalous, mate. Like,
yeah, but it could be the way they've manipulated something in your body. It's just a reflex, exactly. Right?
Push on your spine.
Yeah, exactly.
Control it, or say, listen, I need to jump up and go and excuse myself for a second. Like, yeah,
£100.
Max Kilman got done for it about 3 weeks ago.
Did he?
And he paid it and he admitted it. But it's a bit of a fun one as well, of course. Yeah. And listen, we're trying to raise funds for you know, the Christmas party and what you know what we give to the staff.
Does that include me?
Absolutely not. And that's not because I'm tight either. That's because of he doesn't need it.
Brilliant. That's excellent. Okay, do you know what? I think farting in the physio's table is probably the best way to end this, to round this up, really. Gents, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'm sure at some point we'll get together again
Definitely
and do the same thing. But Dan Bentley, Neil Cutler, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.